I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, where phony tornado alarms reduce readiness. I'm your host, Bob Thrillho Mackey, and this is a chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I broke the 11th commandment.
Who else?
Cup and ball hog, Dave Rudden.
Oh, it's so good. And today's episode is Marge, Be Not Proud.
Shoplifting is a victimless crime, like punching someone in the dark.
Today's episode aired on December 17th, 1995, and Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
Boy, Bobby, Beanie Babies and Pogs were the top toy on every Santa's list. Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You is spending its second holiday season at the top of the charts, thus cementing it as a standard. And Robin Williams, Bonnie Hunt, and Kirsten Dunst all-star in Jumanji, which unseats Toy Story at number one at the box office.
How dare you, Jumanji. I have actually never seen it, but I kind of want to go back this many years later and see those disgusting CGI animals and how hideous they look.
Not terrible. Because I just watched...
It was a fine movie.
Watched it for the first time this year.
Really?
When they came out the new Jumanji, which
I really liked. Which made $1 billion.
I hear that is like a really good movie, actually.
It is. Yeah. I really like it. Yeah.
Wow. Like Fast and the Furious kind of good? And
yeah, just so insane. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Hart, Dwayne Johnson, and Jack Black are hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing
Karen.
Themselves, but also, I mean, they're not playing themselves. They're playing like teenagers.
Playing in their bodies. I do like that.
But it's like a woman or a girl is in Jack Black's body.
Like
they all have like
girl kind of
the most inappropriate or the most different bodies, right, in their adult form. It's really cool.
The original Jumanji, it was when Robin Williams opened films. And he was like, it's the biggest star in the world, Robin Williams. He was the rock of his day.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out at his normal hairiness in Jumanji.
Yeah. Like yes. He was finally allowed to be free.
And this was when Bonnie Hunt got to star in movies.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
Let's give Bonnie Hunt a try.
Who was the cop in this movie?
David Alan Greer.
David Alan Greer. He's hilarious in it.
Yeah. There was also the hilarious scene, which is only funnier with time, of the old-timey game hunter buying crazy powerful guns for free.
Who, by the way, is not Andy Dick. Every time I see clips, I'd be like, oh, Andy Dick's in this movie? It's not Andy
it
Dick.
It should be.
This Jumanji talk overpowered the other things. What were they? There was the holiday thing.
Pogs and Beanie Babies.
Pogs and Beanie
number
Babies.
Number one toys of 1995.
I don't associate
not
Beanie
the
Babies.
Not the Virtual Boy, though,
right.
Even though it was on sale.
It was on clearance at this point. But yeah, Beanie Babies I don't associate with the mid-90s. I think of that more of a late 90s thing. But man, like I said, it was when... Like, it peaked. It, like, hit peak Beanie.
Yeah.
They debuted in the mid-90s, but yeah, it would peak.
I guess it didn't, like, make the rankings that year, but this year was big for games, because, like, 1995 was the launch of the Saturn and PlayStation, and I don't know about the N64.
No, that was 96.
96.
They waited a whole nother year. They thought they could pull that. They did it with the Super NES, and then they thought they could pull it off with the N64. It didn't work as well. I mean, that's as good a point as any to say, like, we are game players and former game writers, so this episode of The Simpsons really touched us, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, as also a Christmas enthusiast, it's also like, we waited 6 years for a new Simpsons Christmas episode. Like, I thought, like, you know, around like fourth or fifth season, like, I guess they're never doing that again.
Mm-hmm. That's what made this special. I mean, they would eventually go on to make one every like two or three seasons, but this was like a big deal, especially because A, Christmas special, B, like we said, it is a very authentic take on video games.
Yeah, actually, I'm like such a Christmas nut that I watched every single Simpsons Christmas episode over the holidays. I also had like so much time that I just did it. There are four Christmas episodes that are interchangeable as the best one ever. Like this, the season one, I think the season 23 one,
it's Christmas past one.
Yeah, and I forget the other one.
Well, the Skinner Sense of Snow?
No, the one where they fool the town.
Funzo?
No.
Grift of the Magi.
No. It's the one where
our listeners are going insane.
Sorry, Bart burns down the tree. And they fake out.
Oh, yes.
Because I love that and the Christmas of Future Past episode because they're both like almost serious finales. Because the end of that episode is the Simpsons losing everything and still fighting
except
over
a rag. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even their pets stole it away. Yeah. But But this was the return to Christmas. They were ready for it by this point. They thought they'd never do it again because Simpsons Roasting on the Open Fire was the first episode. If you want to learn about the production of that, listen to our interview on Patreon with Mimi Pond, the writer of that episode.
And if you want to know this true story behind this episode, listen to our interview with Mike Scully on Patreon, where he talks about being a filthy child thief.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's why I asked you guys to be on this episode, is because I also engaged in some shoplifting, hopefully. I was caught by my mother shoplifting, and that is what made me stop shoplifting.
Wow.
That'll do it. That'll really do it.
I never shoplifted. Well, maybe I stole like a candy bar or something, but I was a goody two shoes. Yeah. I didn't steal things.
For me, and it's ironic because I would end up in print, but I would steal video game magazines.
Wow.
Just put them right in your sleeve, right?
Yeah.
Like, roll them up.
Yeah, what I would do is I was always paranoid about those like machines or whatever at the front door that like would beep.
Yeah.
So I would tear out the UPC symbol and just like stick it in my pocket. It always takes so long. And then, yeah, one day my mom actually saw me putting the magazine in my pocket. And then I like wrote her a note, and I was like, "I'm so sorry, Mom. I'll never do it again."
And you're still
and
not.
And she bought it.
You went on to steal several more magazines.
I never did after that.
Huh. And Bob, you never shoplifted?
I was a good boy.
Yes,
I would look down upon shoplifting.
What I should have done was made a magazine about my mom and framed it, because then it would be the same sort of.
Retro. It would have been a sweeter ending.
Yeah,
but you weren't as creative as Bart.
No.
I actually had been the Don Broadcast in situations at a Blockbuster video twice. We had to deal with shoplifters, and my feeling was, I don't give a fuck, steal this shit. Like, what am I gonna get in a fight with you?
I worked at a GameStop where I believe one of the managers was like very vigilant about like pursuing shoplifters and actively going after them. And I'm like, number one, you told me like you can't touch a customer even if they steal. Number two, I'm not like chasing someone who stole Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I don't give a shit. We have shrinkage for a reason. It's part of a storage budget.
I also worked at GameStop for a while, and like I never actually caught anyone in the act. It'd only be afterwards where, why are there a hunk of like a giant stack of Hey You Pikachus missing?
The best shoplifters were the ones we never caught, which they were super smart. We at Blockbuster, we would sell pre-played games, and they came in these clamshells and went over the full game case. Now a fool would try to open it from the bottom where the lock is, and they'd be like, well, I'm not getting in there. The top is so easy to crack open the top. So they just went to a blind corner of the place, cracked open the top, and took out the game disc of like 20 copies, and then just left. And I was like, damn, that's pretty good. Because the game disc didn't have the scanner thing that would set off either. I blame Blockbuster for that, because they decided, well, the cheap thing to do is to just have two people working on a busy Sunday. If they had a third person walking the floor, that wouldn't have happened.
Actually, when I worked at that GameStop, it was in the mall, and I was dating one of the girls who worked at Suncoast. That's right. We were mall-cross lovers. It didn't work out, but I would hear her stories about people like coming in like ninjas with razor blades, like stealing like hundreds of DVDs, just like slicing the little plastic, popping it out, and like without even opening the case, just like sliding it out.
Yeah. Man, I mean, the biggest thievery that happened under my watch at GameStop was kind of a clever ruse where I had opened the glass case behind the shelf, and like right after I'd done that, one guy asked me a question about a game in the back, and he was working in conjunction with this guy in the front. So when I walked to the back, he opened the case and took like 10 copies of Devil May Cry.
Whoa. That's a good trick. Like, no, go in the back. Check in the back, guys.
Yeah. Like, I only learned about it because another star-crossed event happened where someone from EB Games said, hey, we just had like 10 copies of Devil May Cry and like 5 copies of Devil May Cry 2 traded in. Do you know are you guys missing any of them? And I turned around, I'm like, oh,
Well, that's nice that they were helping you out there.
But then I was called Devil May Cry Dave for years afterwards.
Why not Devil May Cry?
I know.
They're not as clever as pun masters as Dave.
Yeah, but then when I started at GamePro years later, we had 1 year where we still used like pseudonyms before we just went to our real names, and I couldn't think of anything, so I just went with Dave May Cry.
Well, in this episode, though, is a real like gut punch for me. Bob and I were talking about this beforehand. We're both Mama's Boys, the Mama's Boys of Talking Simpsons.
Big time.
I mean, yeah, I'm kind of a Mama's Boy too. And yeah, this happened to me like probably a year or two beforehand. It's like, oh boy.
And I mean, this specifically didn't happen to me, but I've definitely felt the sting of a disappointed mother.
Oh yeah.
And this makes me want to, the ending every time is like, I wish I had this, I miss my mom.
It does remind me of even being an adult and fucking up. It's just like, okay, what can I do to make this better? And the other person's just like, I don't know, just like, you're like, I just want to do something. Like, let Please. Me do something. Yeah, just like, it's like being punished with guilt. I mean, rightfully so, yeah. But it's just like the sting of guilt hurts more than the sting of punishment.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were all hardcore gamers probably in 1995 playing.
I thought they did a really good job in this episode of like capturing like the gaming zeitgeist at the time.
Yes, the totally in your face console wars era where advertisements are screaming at you and calling you an asshole and telling you to buy games.
I haven't listened to the commentary or anything, but I assume that the guys are playing games at this point.
I think so. I mean, there's a lot of deep cuts on this that like this would just be like a weird Donkey Kong pastiche or something if they weren't actually aware of these games.
It's something that always drove me crazy, like say in Roseanne, where they actually had a good episode about getting a Super NES and that almost bankrupting them to get that as a Christmas present. But when they talk about the games they're playing, she's like, I got the fifth crystal skull from the Brass Monkey. And I'm like, that's not a game.
Yeah.
Just say you're playing Super Mario.
And the sound effect on the screen is like blank, blank, blank.
Yeah.
But okay. It drove me crazy.
Before we get to Bonestar, I want to say that was named by the great writer Dan Graney, who we interviewed, one of our greatest interviews. They're all great, but I love talking to Dan. And I do want to say also that there was a Bloodstorm before Bonestorm. It was a 1994 fighting game. Oh. In 2011, there was Bulletstorm. And in 2016, I believe, there was Stormblood. that is the Final Fantasy XIV second expansion.
Oh, that's right.
But no game can now use Bonestorm. But tons of games really want to use Bonestorm, but
there's
they can't.
Mr. Bones.
Mr. Bones.
And you can hear all that interview at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where you can sign up today. Got to get that plug in early. I got to do it. Why don't we get to our first clip here? It's a Krusty Kind of Christmas.
It's a Krusty Kind of Christmas, brought to you by ILG, selling your body's chemicals after you die, and by Little Sweetheart Cupcakes, a subsidiary of ILG.
Oh, hi! I didn't hear you come in. Welcome to my home. And no... Say, did I hear some carolers?
Come, they told me.
Hey, it's respected private citizen Tom Landry and South American sensation Shushisha Shushashi Shushu. Boy.
Now, stay tuned for a video Christmas card from Tupac Shakur.
So was that Tom Landry? He was still alive.
Yes, he was still alive. But Homer wouldn't buy his hat just yet.
The writers were on a real Tom Landry kick at this point for some reason.
I always took the line, respected private citizen Tom Landry, is that they like legally couldn't mention the NFL on Krusty's show.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's how I read that joke now. And I love, unironically and ironically, musty old Christmas specials like this one. One of my all-time favorites is the Colbert Christmas.
It's
Colbert
timeless. Report. It's so great, yeah.
Or the on the Kids in the Hall one, the Buddy Cole Christmas special. That was another great one.
I always thought when I was a kid that Krusty botching that name was just an excuse for him to say shit.
Shoshashitla is based on Shusha, who I was tweeting about yesterday. People are like, how do you know about Shusha? So Shusha is and was then a Brazilian entertainer, kids entertainer. The thing about her is she was extremely hot and wore really revealing outlets on kids shows. And I don't know if I should be ashamed of this, but I think the show was secretly for guys, boys going through adolescence, because at 12, I'm like, I'm on board the Shusha train. I will take, let it take me anywhere. And now as an adult, I'm watching Shusha clips for this episode. I'm like, I think my ideal death is Shusha killing me.
Jesus. Well, so, yeah, here's the clip you have here, Bob, of the Olsen twins on Shusha.
Yes, I want to point out, listen to how like media trained they are. They are just savvy and cynical immediately.
These poor kids.
It's spooky, but it's funny.
Oh, good. Can I ask a question or another question? Can you come again? Yeah?
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay, I know. Stars. Little and big stars, I know. I have a lot of things to do. But if possible, you come again?
Yes.
Good. That's good.
There we go.
Oh,
I love how Shusha's being, they're clearly not into it, but Shusha's like, yeah, you big star. You too busy for Shusha.
Too busy for Shusha, but come on, say yes.
Like, someone turned me on. It's fully subtitled on YouTube. I recommend the 1989 movie Super Shusha versus Satan, where Shusha fights Satan and she's wearing hot pants throughout the entire movie, and it's great.
She's actually very conservatively dressed in that one there.
Usually you see her entire midriff at the same time, but yes, Shusha, if you're listening, you know, pick up the phone.
Is this the first time that Krusty appears in something that has the initials KKK?
It is, but they're not getting it. It's not as obvious. Yeah. And I think that wasn't definitely intentional on the writer's part. Yeah, and the zoo.
I guess it's Krusty Krine Christmas. I don't know if the C, if it's a C or a K.
Is a K. I remember seeing. But that Shusha stuff, too, she was on.
Her name is Shusha Henry, and we're married now.
Shusha was on American TV here on the Family Channel, of all things.
Really?
It's shocking.
Yeah.
Zushashi, she would return in season 12's Trip to Brazil.
I do want to say it was sort of like when you were a small boy of 12 and you could not access pornography, you would watch like The Grind or whatever.
You'd watch The Grind.
This was very similar.
Yeah. Or you'd maybe stay up late and watch E's Wild On, perhaps.
Yeah.
If you could. And Tupac would be dead within a year of this joke. And I say dead in quotes because we all know he's still making out albums somewhere else.
He made like 30 albums after his death.
Yeah, it's true.
And I'm sure they're all good because they were not released before he died. So
I always thought Shusha, whatever her name is, was supposed to be like Charo.
That was sort of like 20 years ago, that sort of figure, although she was for adults.
Mm-hmm. And I got her confused with the Sabado Gigante ladies as well, which is of a similar vein. And then the joke about a Jewish entertainer doing a Christmas special, like Barbara Streisand did that all the time. Same with Kathy Lee Gifford.
Yuck.
Well, yeah. Yuck. Or Kathy Lee Epstein is her real name is.
Well, it is when people of all religions gather together to worship Jesus Christ.
And then we get an ad that is so... They got the 90s ads perfectly here.
You want excitement? Dump this up your stocking!
Whoa! Entertaining? Oh, yeah.
So tell your folks, buy me Bone Storm or go to hell!
Buy me Bone Storm or go to hell!
Bart?
Young man, in this house we use a little word called please.
It's the coolest video game ever!
I'm sorry, honey, but those games cost up to and including $70. And they're violent and they distract you from your schoolwork.
Those are all good points, but the problem is they don't result in me getting the game.
I know how you feel, Bart. When I was your age, I wanted an electric football game more than anything in the world. And my parents bought it for me, and it was the happiest day of my life. Well, good night.
Well, first off, let's talk about the game of Bone Storm is very much Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I mean, that song is very Mortal Kombat-y, and the idle animation they have when they're, like, dazed is the... You know, do the fatality animation.
And the boring game that they show is basically Liu Kang fighting a tank.
Yeah, and then afterwards, it's two Goros fighting each other.
Which I think I don't think the Mortal Kombat franchise had reached that yet. I don't think they had anyone besides Goro who was forearmed yet. Mm-hmm. But I think
by 95, I think they were up to Mortal Kombat 3.
That Centaur guy was in it, at least.
Kitaro. And then they had like a Lady Goro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had multiple Goros at that point. I apologize.
But also,
you couldn't find a tank yet, though.
And the logo of Bone Storm is very Mortal Kombat as well. Like they reference it very well. And I will, though Santa Claus is not based on a video game ad at all. He's based on one Dave and I know very well.
Tim! Gotta have beef. Gotta have spice. Need a little excitement? Snap into a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah.
Man, I never really thought about that.
Yes. He says, need a little excitement. That's what Santa says that right before shoving something up your stocking.
I was always hung up on the fact that, like, is this guy supposed to be a character in the game? Because it seems, like, kind of short-sighted to have a Christmas-based character in your game.
Like Clay Fighter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, so I really want to say, thinking about it, I think that the boring game that we see is Liu Kang fighting a tank. I think they're escalating the Street Fighter you beating up a car in the bonus round.
Yeah. Oh,
and one other thing, this episode takes place in winter, which is why we see snow. But a weird thing that they're doing is they're using crickets to signify nighttime, which you're not going to hear crickets in winter.
They're all dead.
Yeah, they're in jail.
They're in jail, yeah. Break out.
And they also didn't get, like, Homer... Like, was it nighttime when he made that... When Bart made that request? Because I thought they were watching date... I guess that was a thing that would air in primetime.
Yeah, they were watching a primetime special while Marge was making dinner. Yeah. Or, no, cleaning up after dinner. She was washing the dishes.
Yeah.
And I would definitely... If a video game commercial told me to say something, I'd say it to my mom. Like, so that's very true of Bart, too.
And we should say these commercials, or commercials of this type, were airing during The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Like, this was the market because, as Bill Oakley told us, kids were watching The Simpsons more than adults.
And this was, like, the era of, like, in my opinion, like, unforgettable commercials, like the Mortal Kombat ones, where it's just like a person in the streets yelling Mortal Kombat, and the NBA Jam ones, like just
or perhaps this Play It Loud commercial for Killer Instinct.
Holy
same graphics, same moves.
It looks like the arcade, man.
Arcade, man.
16 bits.
16 bits.
All I can say is... Killer Instinct, only on Super NES. Complete with Gunna-Cut game music CD. It's totally... uncensored.
Who needs a new system?
Wow. So I should point out
that... The mom is very shocked there.
The Play It Loud era of Nintendo was a reaction to Sega's in-your-face marketing. Nintendo was not ready for that. So with Sega's marketing, they would reference other games. Like, look how shitty the Game Boy is. Look how shitty Mario Kart is.
No one's going to remember that game.
Exactly. But even with Nintendo being edgy, they still don't acknowledge other games. Like, nope, that is just a commercial for them. This is a commercial for us. And we will say, we are in your face and a fat man will explode.
But even though they're in your face, it's like, but we're going to censor all that.
Perfectly. Yeah.
Like, well, I remember they'd had the Butthole Surfer song.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was like, well, I think they don't say the word hell in it.
Maybe they bleep out the word hell. It's like, right. What did they say? Yeah.
The closest thing to mentioning another game in there is that in the Killer Instinct, they say completely uncensored, which that was Nintendo having to say, like, look, we did censor Mortal Kombat. Yeah. We know that you know this one isn't censored.
We're sorry.
And when they say, who needs a new system, that was definitely their 95 ad campaign of like, why buy a PlayStation? Doesn't this look as good as a PlayStation game? It's a Killer Instinct game.
No way, those Tsushin polygons are the best.
It's like papercraft in front of me. So Marge's comments about games costing up to and including $70 is still true 23 years later. In fact, if you buy a game for $70, you're a sucker. Wait 2 weeks. Yeah. They all get under like 30.
Although, even back then, I remember games like Phantasy Star 4 was $80.
Yeah. I paid a year before this episode, I paid $82 of my own money for Final Fantasy 3/6.
You're thinking that had extra megs. Was usually
32.
Yeah. All those megs, they cost a lot, man. And Homer's opinion of Electric Football is a little higher than the critics, which this game sucks. It
doesn't make any sense.
Not a metaphor. And then we get a bunch of corny momness, which all of these just get me because my mom, I think we all had like corny moms who didn't care that they were a big lame.
This is very much like, look out for the shack attack.
All aboard the sleepy train. To visit Mother Goose, Barty's stop is Snoozy Lane to rest his sweet caboose.
Mom, I'm not a little kid anymore. Tuck-in time is lame.
Well, if loving my kids is lame, then I guess I'm just a big lame.
Mom, it's lame to be proud of being lame.
Well, life is like a box of chocolates.
Mom,
you
no,
never
Mom!
Know what you're gonna get.
Marge seems completely unfazed that her son has put a garbage pail on his head.
Yeah.
Probably filled with filth now.
She's seen this a lot from him, I think.
The sound design is great on that without seeing it. Just like it's very well done.
Mm-hmm. And
but what did she say during that part?
This scene makes me sad because I'm like, I did that to my mom. I was like, Mom, come on. Quit being so lame.
Do you guys also have like tuck in traditions with your
I got tucked in. I got a tuck in and a kiss on the forehead, but it wasn't no song or anything.
Nothing elaborate.
So the thing is I shared a room with my younger brother from the time when we were like, you know, both toddlers up until probably like middle school. And like during the prime tuck-in time, the thing my mom would always do is like, you know, she would say goodnight and then she would kiss each of us and then she would whisper in our ears like, you're my favorite. And then when she left, we'd compare notes and always be like, Mom.
Oh, who was she lying
cute.
About?
That's cute. So then we get the dream of renting a video game for 99 cents, which would never happen in 1995.
I want to buy a copy of Bone Storm. Here's 99 cents.
Allow me to summarize the proposed transaction. You wish to purchase Bone Storm for 99 cents. Net profit to me, -$59. Oh, please take my $59. Mm-hmm. I don't want it. It's yours. Seeing as we are unfamiliar with sarcasm, I shall close the register at this point and state that 99 cents is the rental price.
Oh, then may I please rent it, please?
No, you may not. I am all out. Though I do have a surprising abundance of Lee Carvalho's putting challenge.
So I want to get into Lee Carvalho's putting challenge because it is a deep pull to a game that no one remembers, and I'm guessing at least one writer remembered it because it has a weird name. So Lee Trevino's Fighting Golf was a 1988 NES game that's exactly the same as every other NES golf game. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason it has a weird name is because it's a Japanese game. Yeah. In Japan, it was just called Fighting Golf, which is a very Japanese name for a thing. In America, they got Lee Trevino to be on the box, and they called it Lee Trevino's Fighting Golf. There is no fighting. There is golf.
There is fighting in Outlaw Golf.
Oh, that's true. But that would be much later. But yeah.
That's shocking. Well, I guess it's not too shocking because they got Mike Tyson at that time, too. Celebrity endorsements on a video game were definitely happening.
This is around the time that, like, Tommy Lasorda had Sega written on his hat.
That's true.
Yeah. So, yes, Lee Trevino's Fighting Golf, don't play it. You can't.
But they had to make up a new name. And I like Carvalho anyway.
I am Carvalho.
They can bring back Carvalho whenever they felt like.
But there were multiple things I found weird that, first of all, comic book guy, I'm glad he's in the episode, but he all of a sudden has started to rent video games. He's a video game and comic book store.
I know from how comic book stores are a penny's business. Yeah. You don't get rich on that. Yeah. And you certainly don't have the overhead to invest in game rentals.
Yeah. This is back in the day, though, where you would find game rentals at weird places like the grocery store. Here's Super Nintendo games by the bananas. I guess I'll look at these.
You would see that sometime, but I guess I think of it with the... I worked at a mom and pop video store from 2006 to 2008. And there, they didn't rent video games because the boss was like, they're too expensive and people steal them. Yeah. It's not worth it.
I have to point out an easy solution for Bart's problems in this episode. Wait one day.
Yes.
Someone will return their copy, ask to be called when it comes in. I mean,
Book guy's not going to call.
My local rental place that wasn't Blockbuster, they would not call you when the thing was in because, otherwise they would have 50 people to call. You just had to hope it was there. I never got to rent Tiny Toon Adventures on NES. There's a Tiny Toons game. Oh, and the Bucky O'Hare game. I was just super... I wanted to play those games desperately for some reason and never could because they never...
They usually only had just one copy of stuff too.
And my local video store had this awful way of... all the games were out there. Mm-hmm. You had to go up and ask in every individual game.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. Man, that's a bad system there. But somebody was able to get their hands on the game.
Newhouse has Bone Storm! This is great! And all I've done is enter my name! Thrill House! Say, cool dude, can I play too?
It's only a one-player game.
Then how come it says second player score?
Mom! Bart's swearing!
I wasn't swearing right now.
So that shot of Milhouse in the chair is taken from a Maxell cassette tape ad. I don't know if the print ad came first or the commercial. I've seen them both, but it's a guy sitting in a chair. Basically, the music is blasting at him like a wind machine. But we have the commercial here. It's like a butler bringing him a cassette tape and then him getting blown away by the music.
The usual, sir. Please.
Even after 500 plays, our high-fidelity tape still delivers high fidelity. Maxell, it's worth it.
And the music sort of blows a glass of champagne towards him.
That's cute. Yeah. Maybe I did see these commercials. They indoctrinated me because I usually went with Maxell. I went with Maxell or Sony brand tapes when I would make my mixtapes for myself, not for people. They were just for me. Yeah. Only I could appreciate this mix of They Might Be Giants and Weezer songs.
Also, that Thrill Ho joke.
It's so good.
That's like a thing that I feel like kids today wouldn't understand, where it's you have limited space to put in your name in game back then.
I don't know. Some RPGs are still like that, though.
I mean, there's still character limit on some stuff, but the kids playing Fortnite now don't know about the pain of Thrill Ho.
The pain of Thrill Ho.
Poor Milhouse, too. He came up with a great online nickname for himself too of thrill. There has to be a million thrill hoes out there on the internet,
and a million more with like a number after it.
Thrill ho 420.
What's your favorite not fully completed Milhouse name? Milho? Or sorry, Thrillho or Millpool?
Millpool is pretty good.
I think Millpool.
The Thrillho definitely has some extra. Yeah. That Milhouse doesn't know what it says.
Yeah.
That he doesn't realize, oh, Thrillho is a real self-owned there. I was not like Milhouse. My family's house was the game house, much to my parents' chagrin. Like, when we had video games, we were the kids that everybody would come over to and play multiplayer games with. So, though I do love Milhouse's selfishness of just like, this isn't a two-player game. Yeah. And though really, he's denying himself a better gameplay experience. Yeah. He's going to fight the computer? Fight Bart.
I think he's just being a selfish little kid.
Weirdly played Mortal Kombat a lot single player because like my objective was like, look, if I'm going to spend like so much effort trying to beat my opponent, it's going to be impossible for me to do the fatalities that I've scribbled on a notebook paper.
Yeah.
I'm playing against myself and just getting perfect victories and then trying to do the fatality.
I would never play it legitimately, any of those games. I would rent it, then do every fatality, babality, animality, friendship, secret thing, and then bring it back to the store because it's just like, well, I've done it. I've done it all.
And once YouTube was invented, you could just watch those. You wouldn't even have to do them yourself.
And now the Mortal Kombat fatalities are just like too disgusting. They're too realistic. It's not like 15 lungs popping out of someone when they explode. It's just like, we're gonna graphically tear off someone's skin and we model this look like actual nerve damage.
I'm kind of surprised that didn't make like Trump's gameplay highlight reel.
I know. Whoever was compiling that for him really messed up.
They used like the x-ray stuff from Sniper. But
I think what they wanted were ones with guns in it. So Mortal Kombat isn't that.
Striker has a gun.
This man in the corner, he said toasty and it was disgusting.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Sideshow Luke Perry. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time.
So the joke of Try and Save being open on Christmas is not a joke now. All stores are open on Christmas.
I love they're trying to paint this anti-worker thing as a tribute to Christ. Like, and to honor Christ, we're making people work on Christmas.
There was like a couple of years, like within the last few years, where like some stores were actually saying like, no, we're going to actually close on Christmas. But
I appreciate that.
A lot of them have dialed it back.
No, well, because you're giving up money, it seems like. And that's the one thing, you know, everybody's like, oh, America is such a Christian nation. Not when it comes to giving people the day off, like on Christmas Day. We're all Scrooges. Scrooge gave people a day off on Christmas Day. So you're actually worse than Scrooge.
No, I always did love, like, day after Christmas. It was a terrible day to work at GameStop because it's like just as bad as Black Friday, except people are doing returns now.
And they have the post-Christmas depression happening.
But I love that some people, like, there would always be, like, you know, 25% of the people who came in would be angry, like, you didn't sell me this extra thing I needed, so we didn't get to use the system all day. And I'm like, awesome. Yeah. Glad your Christmas was ruined.
That's my fault.
You're being a jerk to me right now, and I retroactively wish that upon you.
I had that at Blockbuster, too, of people calling, like, look, do you have this? I worked on two Christmas days of Blockbuster Video. And both times people called in like, do you rent systems? I was like, we don't anymore. I'm sorry. They're like, but we need a PS2. I bought the wrong game for this. Like,
well, I can't help you.
I do have What About Bob on VHS.
Everyone loves that.
And then I liked working on Christmas to the degree that I got time and a half. And when I worked at a movie theater, they would buy like not great catering, but catering. They'd get you food. Like, so time and a half and food. One of the last times I went to a movie theater on Christmas Day, there was a technical difficulty at the beginning and they had to restart the film. And someone had to go and tell somebody to restart the film. And when she did, she came back and said, I asked them to restart the film. And also, did you know they're not getting paid extra today to work on Christmas? And that like broke my heart as I had gotten that privilege 10 years earlier. And then an asshole behind me said, they should be happy to have jobs.
I would have twisted his head off and ran out of the movie theater.
That guy's almost a bigger jerk as Gavin.
Gavin, don't you already have this game?
No, Mom, you idiot.
I have Bloodstorm and Bone Squad and Bloodstorm 2, stupid.
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. We'll take a Bone Storm.
Well, get two. I'm not sharing with Caitlin.
That must be the happiest kid in the world.
So yeah, Dan Graney, we interviewed him. I congratulated him for making the first joke about millennials ever on television.
He invented Range Rover Mom and Gavin, as they're called, and he talked about that. Mike Scully is not a fan of those characters.
And I have to say, I believe it was the Ayn Rand Institute, or maybe just objectivists in general, who were passing something around the internet, or someone had scanned it, and they were trying to appear hip and cool. And it's like, the left wants you to share your Switch with your sister, who always drops it. And I immediately thought of Gavin, like, get two, I'm not sharing with Caitlin. So it's like, never share. I'm Ayn Rand.
Gavin is being abused in a way by his mother of just being so horribly spoiled, and then he's just a mean kid, and it's depressing. I can see why Mike Scully was depressed by Gavin jokes.
And I do like her kind of checked out, like buying an ultraviolet game for her son, just like, we'll take a Bone Storm.
That's what I whenever, it only happened to me like twice where I even cared, but when somebody rented a GTA game for their child in front of me, I was like, okay, do you know what's in this though? Yeah. I mean, are you sure? Like, they're like, look, it's a game. I'm getting my kid a game. They'll show
it. There was nothing better than like getting a parent to not buy a game for a bratty kid.
Oh man, that must have felt great. And
it's all the joys of being a parent without the actual responsibility.
And also, Gavin and Caitlin are very like mid-90s names.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
And also what's very accurate here is the case where the games are in. Like, that's very, that reminded me of the ones at Target and Kmart. I would say at Toys R Us, RIP, they had these slips of paper you just took to the back.
Little tickets, they just died. They're just closing all their stores as of this recording.
Sad times. Another part of our childhood is gone. And I just also love Bart gets to meet all the kids, like the other two kids show up. And I kind of agree with Nelson that if you're stealing from a giant company and it doesn't impact it doesn't actually impact one of the workers, I think it's a victimless crime, too. It's like, fuck Jeff Bezos. Like, I don't care.
I don't know why, but for a while watching this episode, I mistook what Nelson was saying, which I don't know why I did. But instead of punching someone in the dark, I guess because I'd watched Monster Squad so many times, he said punching someone in the dork.
Oh, not in the nards?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't like dork as a synonym for penis.
Wolf dork.
It's weird. I do love how Nancy hits punch, like punching somebody. Sorry to hit the penis in the mic like that, but it's...
But it's
good.
That would be a very victimful crime to punch someone right in the wiener.
Yeah, but also punching someone in the dark is not victimless. Yeah, the victim doesn't know.
I do have all of the fake game names. Some of them are very good.
They are.
Yeah, Swim Meat, Save Hitler's Brain, Canasta Master, Operation Rescue. I love that one. A Streetcar Named Death, Robot Stampede, and Simreich.
That's really... Though, Bob, you missed my favorite, Angus Podcorny's Caper Toss.
How did I miss that? Wow. It's like seeing all those weird, like, snooker games that are on Steam. Yeah. Like, who is this? Or, like, some guy's a football manager?
I forget the exact name of it, but one of our favorite games to, like, rag on when we worked at GameStop, it was called Jimmy White's Professional Snooker or something.
Yes.
And it's just this sweaty guy who's, like, not ready to be on the cover of a video game. And he looked just like our boss. So was,
I would see that too with the darts games you'd get from the UK too, where they'd put on the professional players and you're like, well, you're just like a fat guy. So it was funny. It was not who you would. They're not the fashion icons they'd put on like Tiger Woods games or whatever. So this borders on very special episode-y of Bart stealing and learning a lesson, but they make it their own in this show. It really works. And then we get a cavalcade of video game stars.
Great.
Go ahead, Bart. Take the Bone Storm.
The store? She's so rich, she'll never notice.
It's the company's fault for making you want it so much.
Don't do it, son. How's that game gonna help your putting?
Just take it! Take it, take it, take it, take it, take it! Take it!
Sonic sounds a lot like Krusty the Clown.
And those are spot on Mario and Luigi. Well, more Mario's voice, because I think this is before...
Pre-Charles Martinet,
I wrote that down, so unless one of the writers went to E3 in like 1994, or sorry, CES or whatever it was, they wouldn't know this. But yeah, this is debuting Mario and Luigi having falsetto voices before that was their official voice. Now, I do want to say, in case you don't know, this is super deep knowledge. I just found out. Charles Martinet,
the French pronunciation.
Charles Martinet, that Mario voice debuted in a game game in Mario Teaches Typing, a game for the PC, and you would not believe how much dialogue he recorded for that PC game. It's all on YouTube, and I just found it. It's amazing.
Wow, I didn't know that either.
They did not know about that game. Yeah. I'm going to say they didn't know.
At this point, all of the Mario voices we had heard were like, gruff Italian guy.
Hey, Luigi, I like pasta. Hey, paisanos.
Yes, that, like that, Captain Lou.
But Donkey Kong was very much what you'd imagine, like, duh.
But the cartoon got it wrong, the CGI cartoon. It's like, that's guys, I'm Donkey Kong.
Oh, man. Now, by the way, I just found this out that, so in the new movie, War of the Planet of the Apes, the apes that turn on Caesar and join the humans, they have the word donkey written on them, which I thought was just the idea of like, yeah, you're pack animals for us. But no, it was a derogatory term from the humans of calling them Donkey Kong. Like, they turned Donkey Kong kind of into a slur in the War of the Planet of the Apes.
Donkey Kong is like the most advanced ape there is. He wears a tie.
That's true.
He figured that out at least.
And yeah, Sonic there is really, he's kind of off. It doesn't sound like Urkel.
Sonic has never had a consistent voice. He's Jaleel White. He's like a cool guy.
Well, it's been Roger Craig Smith for many years now, which
including this clip.
I would have grabbed this clip anyway, Dave, but you beat me to it. So you're the Lego's Dimension expert here. So what's the story?
Well, I mean, Lego Dimensions, it's kind of, it's a, what do they call it? Toys to Life.
Toys to Life, now dead.
But it was kind of its own thing, where because there was Disney Infinity, but that had to be just Disney characters, and I think they were probably contractually obligated to use some Disney characters that they wouldn't want to. But with Lego Dimensions, it's just a grab bag of like Warner Brothers stuff, but also stuff like from Fox.
Whoever else wasn't in Disney Infinity and could be brought in through the Lego mold.
Yeah. So there were so many weird different licenses. There was also Sega. There was Atari, Doctor Who, just like the weirdest smorgasbord. And like some fandom that you're a part of is in there. But yeah, I didn't know. Even though I played it a bit at launch and bought a couple of the packs. Like especially the Back to the Future stuff, because like at that point there was the only other Back to the Future game was from Telltale, which is also pretty good. But every other Back to the Future game was terrible.
Yeah, but and it was made clearly by huge fans and dorky fans of all these properties
would just slip in like crazy references. Like if you have the Sonic pack and the Simpsons pack, I think it's not even like the main pack that has Bart Simpson. You have to buy like the sub Simpsons
the $20
pack, the second pack. If you have Sonic and Bart together on the screen, Sonic actually interacts with Bart in this way.
Hey Bart, remember, if you see a gold brick lying around, just take it. Take it, take it, take it, take it! Take it!
That was the real Sonic saying to the real Bart the line from this episode.
The exact same rating too, but also Sonic's final, take it! It's just like, Sega! And we do have a clip of that commercial. I mean, it was in several commercials. That was the tagline.
Sega!
Okay, so that was a digitized version at the beginning of a game, but that would be the almost at the end of every Sega commercial, that guy going, Sega!
Sega!
Yeah.
It's, though, I like the classier Sega.
That is much more classier and a much more Japanese take on that sort of idea.
But I when I saw shared on Twitter the first time I saw that Sonic saying take it, I was like, well, this Lego Dimensions is great. I'm not going to buy it because this is too much money.
I mean, ultimately, I think it's for adult nerds to indoctrinate their children into things that they like.
These are gremlins. What are those? Well, 30 years ago.
You like them now. That's what they are.
This is mine. Now we're going to go see Ready Player One.
I don't want to.
You'll like it. So Bart thinks he got away with a victimless crime.
I'm outside. I got away with it. I'm free.
Sir, would you open your coat, please?
I don't think this is the kind of coat that opens.
Please step back in the store, sir.
That boy's parents must have made some terrible mistakes.
Shut up, Mom!
That's so awesome.
So mean.
The kind of coat that opens is a thing I think of a lot when I'm putting on a coat.
So,
as a matter of fact, when I came in here to do the podcast, this is a shoes-off household, and I try to make the joke.
Oh, I thought you were being serious.
I mean, they are shoes that take forever to take off.
They're prescription shoes.
Yes.
So Lawrence Tierney.
Play the death jingle.
Death stalks you at every turn. Ah, there it is, death.
So now dead, he died in 2002, born in 1919, a notorious troublemaker for his entire life. And Bill Oakley told a great story of, you know, getting Lawrence on the show and how a driver showed up with him and said, I'm not coming back.
Yes.
I guess he wasn't that unpleasant around the voice directors.
No, he said he was very unpleasant.
Okay, I couldn't remember
director.
That. We've done a lot of interviews.
Yeah. Bill Oakley explains that a bit in our interview with him, yeah, and that he wanted to do the character in a Southern accent. Yeah,
right.
He was hanging around them too much, and that he was also just this, even as an old man, he was this just gruff, scary dude, and they're just like these dweebs. Like, he's surrounded by comedy writer dweebs.
I mean, this is a similar situation to what I think maybe a year or two before this, he was on an episode of Seinfeld, where he played Elaine's father.
Yes. Bob has a clip here, actually.
We have a behind-the-scenes story from all the cast members and the director, I believe, Larry Charles.
We kept our eye on Lawrence because Lawrence stole one of Jerry's knives from the set.
And it was clear that he had taken one of the actual knives from the kitchen part of Jerry's apartment. There was a knife block, and he had this large butcher knife, which I guess he was going to steal.
And I wasn't about to ask him for it back.
Well, of course, Jerry, who is an unusual person,
instead of going, I think we should all maybe, you know, back off,
went up to him and he goes, hey, Lawrence, what do you got there in your jacket?
What's with the knife? And you see the color drain out of Tierney's face because now he's been caught.
And then Lawrence tried to make a joke about how he put the knives in his jacket. He thought it would be funny.
By pulling it out and going, and making the psycho sound. And advancing on Jerry a little bit. And Jerry didn't back up, so I don't know what was in his mind.
Wow.
And I remember looking at Tom, I remember looking at Julia, and just going, this is, we're in the land of the sick now. We're in really scary territory.
Yeah, that's Lawrence Tierney. I got to say, that was from the Seinfeld DVDs. That was back when people gave a shit about DVDs. Those DVDs have like a featurette for every episode, and I think like multiple commentaries.
Yeah, commentaries. They would also have the trivia track that was like the captions, but just trivia
like
stuff.
Pop-up video stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like every episode had like a 3-minute like behind-the-scenes featurette.
They spent so much money on it. And probably, I wonder if they made their money back on that.
And having put together interviews, it's like you interviewed all those people about one story and then intercut them together. I'm just this is me as an editor applauding.
It's amazing. Yeah. But then
I think it speaks to how good Lawrence Tierney is that like those early seasons of Seinfeld, like half of the parents were just recast. Like they were just like, well, we're not bringing Lawrence Tierney back, so we'll just never see Elaine's dad again.
Yes. But he's out of the picture.
Like, we don't want to replace him because maybe they're too scared to.
Well, Lawrence Tierney was a scary guy. I mean, they tell the story on the commentary that he was too rough for Hollywood in the 50s. They kicked him out of Hollywood, and he was back in acting in the 90s thanks to being in Reservoir Dogs with Quentin Tarantino, because Tarantino loved him in old movies because he's an old movie freak. But he would find out on the set that, this is an insane person. he's impossible to direct. There are multiple stories on the many, many, many different versions of Reservoir Dogs they put out with tons of different things of like him almost getting in fights with Michael Madsen, him getting in a real fight with the late Chris Penn, like all these things of Tarantino telling him like, say the line this way. He's like, that's not how a tough guy would say that. But his voice is so specific, you're not going to get anybody else who sounds like Lawrence Tierney. And I always remember, I love the line in Reservoir Dogs where they just say like, the thing, he looks like the thing. it's just beautiful.
I love it too.
And it's perfect casting, but he was apparently a real nightmare to work with on the Simpsons as well. For like, the way Bill Oakley explained it, he was there for 2 hours tops, and they're like, get him the fuck out of here.
He has like 3 minutes of dialogue in this entire cartoon. But yeah, Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, their seasons, famously, they just got a bunch of old men on the show. Like David Merkin, sexy ladies. Oakley and Weinstein, old men.
Mike Scully, famous rock star.
Yes.
Yeah, but before we get to hear much from Don Brodka, we've got another amazing guest star.
Hi, I'm Troy McClure. You might remember me from such public service videos as Designated Drivers, the Life-Saving Nerds, and Phony Tornado Alarms Reduce Readiness. I'm here today to give you the skinny on shoplifting, thereby completing my plea bargain with the good people at Foot Locker of Beverly Hills. Shoplifting began here in ancient Phoenicia. Thieves would literally lift the corner of a shop in order to snatch the sweet, sweet olives within. Oh, Shaheka Zaramesh, will you ever learn? Flash forward to ancient Babylonia.
All right, show's over.
Yeah, I feel like they either couldn't think of more jokes or they just couldn't have time for it. So he just shuts off the tape after one example.
I also mix up that with the beginning of the Stealing Cable episode.
Yeah.
That's true. But they had to make a lot of room for Don Brodka. Which Don Brodka, another name that they pitched on for 8 million years. They're like, but it is the perfect name.
It is very evocative of who he is for some reason.
And this long Don Brodka bit is, this is why you hire Lawrence Tierney. And I would say it was worth the trouble.
You think you're pretty smart, don't you?
No.
Don't smart off to me, smart guy.
I could pay for the game. I'll pay for it.
You know, that kind of mush might fly at Lamps Plus, but don't peddle it here. If I wanted smoke blown up my ass, I'd be at home with a pack of cigarettes and a short length of hose. That's it, Mr. Comedian. I'm calling your parents. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Simpson. This is Detective Don Brodka from Try and Save Security. That's right, Don Brodka. Your son Bart has been caught shoplifting. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a shame, I know, but... Well, try and have a Merry Christmas. They weren't home. Uh-huh. But I left a message on their answering machine. That's right.
Okay. I've really, really, really learned my lesson. Can I please go now?
Yeah, get out of my sight. Hey, kid, one more thing. If you ever set foot in this store again, you'll be spending Christmas in Juvenile Hall. Capiche? Well, do you understand?
Everything except capiche.
Yeah, it's great to know that he's also losing his mind. He's talking to an answering machine as if someone is on the other line, like,
There's so much to unpack there. Like, the fact that he finds himself a minor celebrity.
Yes, that's right, the Don Brodka.
That he's got these weird affectations where, like,
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. Yeah, I did, all right.
It's very rhythmic.
Yes, yeah. And when I watched the DVD for the first time, that smoke up my ass thing was a shock because I taped my VHS copy did not have that line.
See, I saw that in the, I forget what they call the book, but like that, like it was the first 8 seasons.
Yeah, I have that stuff.
I forget what they called it. That was his line. I think, like, on the sidebar thing, that was his line. And I think I taped this episode off syndication. So I never saw, I just assumed it was cut from syndication.
It was not in my original airing of it. Figured my local area was like, you can't say up your ass.
You can't say ass in Florida.
Yeah, certainly not. But though it's a cute line. It deserves a laugh. Bart's right to nervously laugh at that. And also on the behind the scenes, they said that Lawrence Tierney didn't understand the idea of this one-sided phone call joke and that they had to make up lines with him on the spot of like, okay, fine, here, this is who you're talking to, okay? And they just cut it out.
I love him trying to eat the handy snack, too, at the end.
Yes.
And then cursing the cracker.
By the way, in real life, the handy snacks, I've had some recently, they don't even come with the red stick anymore.
It's a BYOS?
Just dip it in the, they call them dippers now. It's like, how dare you save, like, what, a penny, less than a penny on one of those red sticks?
Probably a choking hazard or something.
Nah. I do love something that'll come up later in the episode where it's like when you work in retail, you sometimes just have like a little retail universe. So like that kind of thing will fly at Lamps Plus where it's like, yeah, when you work in a mall or whatever, you know the other stores and like, hey, see the person over at the Orange Julius or whatever.
The person at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Or it's like everyone fears the district manager like he's God, but he's actually like a failed college baseball player who hates his life.
And the realistic look of the behind the scenes store of just like this is a store that only the workers see, and then shoplifters who are taken backstage.
There's a weird shot of a woman staring into the middle distance, wearing just a bra and smoking, and like staring at mannequins.
Odd.
It is creepy.
I think it's supposed to be a non sequitur. You're not supposed to know what it is. And then they kind of have a Ferris Bueller scene of Bart racing the parents home.
I was surprised they didn't go for that reference with like the music or anything like that.
I'm glad they meant more with the dramatic there than a musical reference. And they already had a cooler musical reference ready.
We didn't have a message when we left. Very odd.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada.
Marge, it's Lisa at Camp Granada.
Now to put this tape where no one will ever listen to it.
Oh, poor Alan Sherman.
I know, right?
He's fine. I mean, so one of my favorite lesser-known shit posts is they do that scene, but Homer listens to the entire song just by standing there and blinking. And then when the song ends, like 2 minutes later, he says, "Marge, is Lisa at Camp Granada?" It's just so perfect.
The Camp Granada song is about a terrible camp. That's the gag. But and Alan Sherman, poor Alan Sherman, they not only pay for his music, but then like no one would listen.
Yeah,
to this. Like who would pull it out? As a kid, if I heard Camp Granada on like the radio, I'd be like, "This is a fun little novelty song," yeah. But I would never buy it.
But yeah. It seems like if anyone in the family bought that in the first place, it was Homer.
It'd be
Homer.
Buys
all those shitty like
it's
records.
True.
This Thing I Believe and stuff like that.
He should know what it is.
I had Camp Granada on tape. It was part of a Dr. Demento 20th anniversary collection.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's sorry. Yeah, the video. I think the answer. Machine and the video game technology is the only thing that really dates this episode.
Yeah, Bart can't get home and replace the voicemail with Alan Sherman.
The joke now, I guess, would be that voicemail, they just say like, "Well, your parents didn't set up the voicemail yet, so we couldn't leave it for." Lisa really gets nothing to do in this episode, which I think really pays off at the end, but her getting chest pains from drinking eggnog. I've never liked eggnog, even with alcohol in it as an adult. I just like, yuck, don't like it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so bourbon is already bad enough for me. Why do I want to add it to like egg pudding, you know, just give me the bourbon.
The only time I've found eggnog delicious or delicious looking was in Christmas Vacation when they're drinking out of like the Wally
cool
World
there, yeah.
Mugs.
I do like that.
I just want the Wally World mugs. Yeah.
And I wonder what Marge is using two teapots for at the same time.
It's a lot of tea.
It's a lot of tea, but it's such a great little cartoon visual made realistic for no reason.
Yeah, and this is post Red Hats being flown up into the sky.
Yeah.
I love how they're playing with these like classic cartoon gags.
Yeah. I love that too. Yeah, and so speaking of specific jokes, Bart's vision of Juvenile Hall is so amazing.
If you ever set foot in this store again, you'll be spending Christmas in Juvenile Hall. Juvenile Hall. Juvenile Hall.
Stand behind the yellow line. You will now receive your Christmas presents, donated by the Port Authority Lost and Found Office. Pass your chit to Santa to receive your gift. If you do not have a chit, you will not receive a gift.
Wow! The March 8th newspaper!
Cool! A book of carpet samples!
Come on, new bike. Oh, a soiled wig.
So, do we want to give that line the episode?
Soiled wig, so. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
The joke.
So that Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, that's actually Josh Weinstein doing a voice illegally. He's not supposed to do that.
It's so garbled you can't tell.
So, yeah. I have to like remind myself, the next Christmas when rolls around, I want to do a poll to find out which of those gifts would you prefer. Like I switched between the carpet samples and the newspaper.
I'll take the newspaper. Something to read. March 8th is pretty exciting.
If the carpet samples are clean, then I'll go with carpet samples.
But if that wig came from the wig sphere, then that changes the discussion altogether.
But soiled wig. It's the soiling I'm not into.
It's a very good adjective, soiled.
And hearing Nancy say to soiled wig, it's so great. And that he knows the other kids would be locked up as well. Yeah. I feel like 2 years in a row now, Josh Weinstein has tweeted out that scene as like, I also love the little gag of Bart, of Homer not wanting to go upstairs if Bart has trouble with his zippers.
Like, oh no.
Yeah. You get to see all the photographs. I love those photographs. The family.
Bart as Hitler.
Yeah, Bart as Hitler. Bart, his planning with the word balloon is so perfect that he brought somehow snuck the word balloon with him all the way to the photo and then held it up, and Homer thinks he said it out loud.
I mean, it's good that he got away with it. It's better that that's how Homer thinks dialogue appears when you're speaking during a photo. He thinks we live in a cartoon world. I mean, he does, but...
Yeah, and I saw some internet pedants point out that just like, how can Maggie be in three different Christmas photos? And it's the... Marge doesn't say those are Christmas photos. Those are family photos.
True.
So in the year that Maggie has existed, those are three photos they've taken. So there. I outdid you there,
and
guys.
They have to keep going back because Bart fucks it up.
Yeah. So... also, though, I feel like Santa's Little Helper would, like, he would be throwing up a lot from eating that fake nose.
Man. Hopefully it's non-toxic.
I don't know. I feel like Bart couldn't afford the non-toxic kind. Uh-huh. And so when they head to the, when they head there, first off, I love that Bart can't even remember Capiche. He remembers his catfish.
Yeah, catfish.
And there's another Don Brodko weird aside. I hope you're not going to the Value Vista.
Oh, yeah, the Value Vista tries.
Which is like a, I don't know if they've ever referenced that one again. It's not like Shelbyville.
That's
like
true.
How many towns away is Value Vista? I assume Value Vista is a location.
Maybe like an outlet mall or
guess,
like a strip mall or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a strip mall to me, or also like it. For L.A. residents, it's like Valley Village, the crappy area of L.A. And though this, another one, this feels so real to me of like, it would sometimes feel like an event if my family all went to a big box store together, like a Kmart or a Pick and Save, which was like the closest thing to a Try and Save in my Atlanta area.
So we're just going to do this photo and get out, right? Bada bing, bada boom.
I want to look at the pets and write things on the typewriters and see if the new dictionaries are in.
Okay.
I want to price some flip-flops and smell the new tires and consult the pharmacist for some free medical advice.
Sure. We're going to have a great day. Bada bing, bada boom. Right, Bart? Bart? What's wrong, honey?
Uh-oh. Somebody's got tired little legs.
Oh, I love it. Homer's being so sweet there.
Yeah, Lisa's version of Lisa's thing about the typewriters is like a few years before making the offensive screensaver at Best Buy on all the computers.
Oh, man, I never thought to do that.
Or writing nasty things on the word processor.
Wow, man, I should have thought of that.
Do they still have just computers out for you to fuck with in stores? I don't think they do that anymore.
And they kind of have them all behind glass these days.
But it used to be a big deal, like, look, computers, touch them.
Before and after my magazine thieving days, I went, like, that was a thing. Like, if we went to like a Kmart or whatever, where are the books? I'll just hang out by there for the whole time you're shopping, and then just come over here and pick me up.
Yeah, it was.
I'm
going to
sit on the floor and read a thing.
Yeah, that is how I would treat it as well. Okay. I just read. Well, I'm just going to read every magazine while we're here. I'll read this Mario Super Mario RPG preview 5 times in 5 different magazines.
Wow, there's a guy in here named Mallow. I don't care.
And then we get such a cute little nothing joke, but I love it, of Homer thinking not getting Marge's obvious ask for a present. And this affected me in a different way as a kid, because I swear to you, my dad never bought a present for my mom, like, ever. Or at the very least, not unless he was guilted into it.
Not even for Christmas?
No, not really. He also never really thought. He left Christmas present buying to my mother for me and my brother, and then he'd be mad that we thanked her and not him. We knew she bought him, and he didn't. But then, because he left it up to her, she wasn't buying a gift for herself, so it just ended up as no present. Like,
presents are a sign of weakness.
And the quick zoom in on Homer's head is a little different approach to the classic brain gag. Like, it's presented a bit differently, but I do love that he thinks an ironing board cover is pretty great. And I do miss the nostalgic artifice of the Kmart photo center, the family photos at a Kmart or a Walmart or whatever, that basically Goofy's job in the Goofy movie.
That's right.
I have, like, in the last decade, went to one of those. Like, I think Sears still has them. And it was literally, and I just went there with, like, a bunch of, like, this is probably, like, late 20s, like, a bunch of other late 20s friends. We just went to one of those and, like, let's get a picture together. Let's all dress up nice and take a picture together.
So many of their photos are just ironic ones now. Like, yes, we only do this ironically. No one actually wants this.
It still makes money.
Your money isn't ironic. Your money is all too earnest.
Also, your phone has a better camera than us, so whoops.
But they know, composition and shit like that and layout. And
well, they got the props, too. Like, you don't have that background.
I also look way better in, like, that photo that we took at the Sears than, like, most photos. Yeah. So,
you don't have a giant basketball at home you can lean on?
So when I was a kid, I did not know who Ansel Adams was. Mm-hmm. I thought at first Bart says asshole on TV, like, hey, asshole Adams. Yeah. Like, he kind of has to over enunciate it now. I know.
Ansel.
Hey, Ansel Adams. It's the guy's real name. I mean, come on. And
how would Bart know that? That's weird.
He's
some history class.
But they take the photo and Bart is caught.
Did I tell you? No returns for busted merchandise.
What are you doing to my son?
I'm afraid your son broke the 11th commandment. Thou shalt not steal.
That's crazy. Bart's not a shoplifter. He's just a little boy.
Oh, sure. Now he's just a little boy stealing little toys. But someday he'll be a grown man, stealing stadiums and quarries.
My son may not be perfect, but I know in my heart he's not a shoplifter. Fine, play the tape. Then everyone can see you've got the wrong boy. Wait! Mom, I don't want you to see this. I did it.
So Brodka thinks he's going to turn into Carmen Sandiego. Is that what's happening?
Stealing quarries and stadiums.
The 11th commandment line is so great because you think he's about to say a joke is in the 11th commandment. Don't fuck with Don Brodka or something like that. But instead he says what is the 7th or 8th commandment depending on your definition.
From season 2, it's Homer and Lisa. Homer versus the 8th commandment?
Yeah. So it's just such a good joke. I love that joke construction there.
Me too.
But then they just go with the emotion here, and it's just... Yeah. So this was an episode when I was a kid, I didn't like rewatching it as much, or sometimes even when I got to this point, I fast-forwarded because I didn't like the emotion. I just wanted to laugh at jokes, but maybe I was really hiding from my emotions by not wanting to watch it.
But, I mean, to Bart's credit, he didn't want Marge to see it. Mm-hmm. He wanted to tell her.
Yeah.
He wanted to confess, even though it was literally at the last possible second.
Mm-hmm. He could have said it slightly earlier, but by the time that Brodka's got out the VHS tape, you've been caught.
It's too late.
It's over.
And it was on every TV in the store.
Like, how humiliating.
Yeah.
And the way it really hurts hearing, too, how Homer says, my son's a thief.
Yeah.
It's like, ouch. And that Brodka humiliated him like that in front of everybody. Like, it's poor. You just feel so bad for Bart. And I've felt that, like, tiny and awful in front of everybody and that kind of thing. And I hate it. I hate that feeling. And this is a fine line with Homer here because I have been yelled at by a father in this way of, like, oh, you think I did that for fun? Like, but Homer also has to be funny in this scene. So he has to yell at Bart but also be funny.
Stealing! How could you? Haven't you learned anything from that guy who gives those sermons at church? Captain, what's his name? We live in a society of laws. Why do you think I took you to all those police academy movies? For fun? Well, I didn't hear anybody laughing. Did you?
Except at that guy who made sound effects.
Honk, honk.
Honk, honk.
Where was I? Oh, yeah. Stay out of my booze!
Mom, I'm really sorry.
I know you are.
Is there anything I can do?
I don't know. Why don't you go to bed?
Okay.
As we learned last season, Homer thinks the movies are painful and disturbing. The Police Academy movies.
Oh, God, I just love that. I didn't hear anybody else laughing, did you?
Stay out of my booze.
When the second he's derailed, he thinks that Bart drank, and that's why he's mad. But I just love the animation, too, when he goes honk, honk. Like it's kind of like he's saying that there was a football goal. He's like, honk, honk.
And Homer is clearly no Michael Winslow.
Yeah. Like, honk, the faces honk. He makes for all those. Like, there's one where his, like, bottom teeth are, like, jutting out, and it's like, doesn't correspond to the noise he's making, but it's funny.
It's such a funny drawing. But then Marge is like muted disappointment. Yeah. That's the whole point of this scene is Scully saw it. You're ready for your dad to scream at you, but you're not so ready for your mom to just be like shocked and just empty and just like, I know.
And like, I've gotten the yellings from my parents, but it's when they are so disappointed that they just can't like register to you. That hurts way more.
Yeah, it does. The parents out there, use that trick to hurt your children back.
Like, warp them.
I love seeing Bart and Lisa have conversations in the kids' bathroom. Like, the kids' bathroom is great, and bathroom rugs are disgusting. Or they can be if you're not taking care of them.
You know what's worse than a bathroom rug? Mm-hmm. A bathroom with carpet in it. I've been in them, and I'm like, this is just, I'm just stepping in pee and poop.
Yeah, ugh, a carpeted bathroom. Who would do such a thing?
It's a nightmare.
So I love when we hear Marge's version of the Tuck in Time song for Lisa. Just the line of her ticket is a candy cane made out of gingerbread. Like, that doesn't that's nonsense when you deconstruct it. It's a candy cane made out of gingerbread.
We're in Mother Goose territory here.
It's true. I got to say now, as an adult, the scene of Marge worrying about Bart getting away from her. It's just like, this just hurts now. I'm like, oh, I see this from Marge's side entirely now.
Oh, great. The Tuck-In Express is right on time. Good night.
Oh. Mm.
I figured out the boy's punishment. First, he's grounded. No leaving the house, not even for school. Second, no eggnog. In fact, no nog, period. And third, absolutely no stealing for 3 months.
I always thought I understood my special little guy, but somewhere along the road, his hand slipped away from mine.
What are you gonna do?
He's not my little baby anymore. Maybe I mother him too much.
Oh, just hearing, he's not my little baby anymore.
Yeah.
Just,
and she's holding up the like the little hand imprint of Bart H. 4.
Yeah.
And Homer is drawing a robot. I forget what it's
doing.
He's
cooking a hot dog over a trash fire.
Yeah, that's true.
With the word robot and arrow pointing at the robots.
I thought he was taking notes about what he was doing to going to do to Bart. So yeah. He's not going to remember any of this in the morning.
He's kind of checking us like, yeah, what are you going to do?
And then also his punishments are all bad. When he's trying to punish, he's just no good at it. They're all weirdly strict.
Take a break from stealing.
Yeah, at least 3 months. Can you give him that? And... then Bart gets up. Bart is feeling the emptiness of Marge not being in his life, the not getting the marshmallow in his cocoa. Though I could go for a marshmallow soaked in hot chocolate.
That looks good. Camp Grandpa.
Yeah.
Give me a slice, too.
I can eat like one marshmallow a year. That's it for me.
I just love that shot of Grandpa, like with his, he's like a cartoon hobo about to eat one bean. He's just got those two knives.
Saves up for me. And that giant marshmallow reminds me of the cranberry sauce a la Bart.
Oh, yeah.
And those are Clown Party brand marshmallows. Clown Party.
And that Bart has questions for Milhouse that Milhouse doesn't have the emotional understanding to answer.
Do you ever worry that your mom might stop loving you?
What? I'm more worried about piranhas. Did you see that movie where they send a nuclear submarine to fight the piranhas? And one of them swims right down the periscope and bites the guy in the eye, and he goes, and that old lady told him it would happen?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Hey, how come you're not playing Bone Storm?
It got boring. I'm really into this cup and ball now. Whoa! Wow! Man, you never know which way this crazy ball's gonna go!
Yeah, right. You're just trying to trip me because you don't want me playing with your video game.
Here, go ahead.
No, let me try the cup and ball.
Get your own!
Come on, don't be a cup and ball hog.
Hey, give it! That's my house!
Come on, give me a cup and ball, you cup and ball hog. Come on, you little wink-wink.
Mom! Bart smoking!
I love the two scenes of Luann like kind of patting him down the stairs.
Yes, those are great. But Bone Storm really is a flash in the pan. Yeah. Like, he's just done with it in like 2 days.
Is that like Outbreak? Or I can't remember. What movie is that?
Maybe the movie Piranha or Piranha 2?
From my research, it's not a specific movie I can find. But commentators out there, let us know if we're missing one. Yeah. I'm sure you will.
But also, Luann like lets Milhouse, you know, watch and play some like twisted stuff for his age.
Yeah, she's already a pretty absentee parent before the divorce.
Yeah.
The family is falling apart as we speak.
Yes.
But I do love Bart wanting to do mom stuff in a very sad way.
Mm. All right. Go. Milhouse, what are you... Okay, I won't bug Milhouse, but... Well, Mrs. Van Houten, this is going to sound kind of dumb, but can I hang out with you while you do mom stuff?
Mm.
Who are Dan and Sherry Adler?
Just friends of ours.
Oh. And who is Warren Burke?
He used to tune our piano before we got rid of it. He grew up in Mechanicsburg.
Really? Tell me I'm good.
Those are some Oakley and Weinstein-ass jokes. Like, he used to tune our piano. He grew up in Mechanicsburg. Like, it's an interesting fact.
And before they sold it.
Before they sold it. So that's how sad their lives are. It's like, we have to keep in touch with everybody.
Well, I was like, this was kind of the warped view I had where I thought, like, at the age I am now, I would be sending Christmas cards to all sorts of random people that I knew at one point in my life.
I can't even send like Christmas emails to people. Yeah. Or just like thank you letters like that.
I think I sent out Christmas cards up to a point, but I wasn't getting anything back. And I'm just like, this is too much work. I at least send me something.
Yeah, a little reply, a thank you would be nice.
Also, but here is Bart actually motivated to lick envelopes.
That's true. He knew how to make a game of it by now. Yes. and then we get the little bit with the snow, the family of snowmen, which is also painful, of just like the symbolism of it, like, man, we don't need Bart. Like, yeah. I guess if you want to build it, you can make it out of the snow under the car.
Yeah. Your family doing things without you is like, that's the toughest thing.
Yeah.
That snow under the car is very familiar to me as an Ohioan. I'm sure, Dave, you as a New Yorker, where, it would snow in the winter, but for months after the winter, there would be these what we called snow boogers, which were the hardened, just like boulders of grime, like street grime and snow that would take like another month to melt. It was just like a solidified glacier of just like dirt and ice, and it's just disgusting.
You'd find in like shopping center parking lots, they would just like make a big pile of it.
Yeah. It's like whenever they would plow the driveways in those shopping centers, they'd always shove more into that giant glacier and make it even filthier.
And if you were like desperate because it hadn't snowed in a while, like you would approach that and maybe climb it or throw it.
This soot snow.
Because when you imagine snow, you imagine happy white, fresh snow that just fell down. Not the kind that has been made gray with garbage.
It's like disgusting.
And then that's what Bart is made out of. So his snowman is the broken garbage snow.
He looks like, to make another video game reference, like a Mr. Saturn, but Bart. Like, just a giant head.
Until a crow, like, just destroys it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's such beautiful imagery. And then he just sees that. Then they're all watching TV without him. They're just like, I guess Bart's not part of the family anymore. I guess he doesn't want to be.
Is that normally the angle that they have the TV in that house?
I guess they set it up differently this
just
for
make
Christmas
Bart sad.
Maybe to make room for the tree?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. But so then Bart heads back to try and save after realizing he could still steal stuff like how Nelson does, which I just love the line of like, I knew you'd like it. Which
I love how just, again, these are very Oakley and Weinstein-ass jokes, a replacement tire for a wheelbarrow. Yeah. next season, there will be another very specific wheelbarrow joke. Wow, a yard king.
I forgot that one. Wow. And so then Bart, it seems to imply to the audience that he's about to steal again. He's going to show them what a black sheep can do. And he arrives home. And just as Lisa is suffering from horrible brain damage, she gets it real bad in this episode, Lisa does.
There you are. You can help me spray the cookies. Are you hiding something? What do you have under your jacket?
Nothing.
Oh, Bart, not again. Give it to me.
I told you, I don't have anything.
You can't hide from me in this house, Bart. I spend 23 hours a day here.
Get him, Ma.
There's no place left to run, Bart. Hand it over. Oh, Bart. I can't believe you did this.
I wanted to surprise you for Christmas.
Oh, sweetie. This is the best present a mother could get. I love you so much. My little bitty Barty.
Mom.
Oh, it gets me every time.
And like when I confessed to my mom, it was like I needed to do this to make things like the way they were before, where like I'm still like your little boy.
Yeah,
like,
I know that it didn't scar you for life or just say like, no, our relationship's just over now. Yeah. You're not the innocent I thought you were. But this moment with that he reclaims it, he fixes everything. Yeah.
Especially, well, like, I don't know how he was let back into the try and save. Like, yeah, even to make a purchase.
True.
Like,
he went to the other one. Remember, there are two.
Oh, Valley Vista. Yeah.
He must have gone on a bus or something to go there. But the Don Brodka, I got to say, he's good at catching Bart. Not anybody else. Like, Nelson is constantly going in there and stealing stuff.
Everyone else is stealing. Yeah, it's true. But I think you were going to point out, Henry, like, when I just noticed at this time after, like, 40 viewings, when she adds Bart's picture to the family picture, it straightens out. It's very, very it's a very clever visual metaphor for the family.
It's beautiful that it really does recenter the family and fixes things and sets it right by putting it in there. And it's just a beautiful imagery there. And he's pretty lucky that receipt was stuck to it and saying paid in full, which it's not really what receipts say.
Why would it
say
paid in full on a frame? It's like $5.
It'd be weird to go in and get your photo taken and then steal it. It's like they have a record of that. They have, like, negatives.
That's true. But I guess they had to make it painfully obvious to viewers. Like, look, he didn't steal this. He paid for this. But, God, just the way she, like, hugs and kisses him and says, my little bitty Barty. It's just like,
which
ouch,
I think
ouch.
Is a reference to Billy Barty.
I think so.
The actor.
You have a clip
My
here.
Favorite clip of him.
No, I've looked all over. I don't see a Noodles McIntyre.
McIntosh.
That's it. He plays Noodles McIntosh, the tiny cameraman in UHF.
You know who he beat that role to get that role?
Who?
Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh.
Yes, he talks about how Billy Barty got that role instead of him.
Wow, yeah. I had no idea. Yes.
I also recently saw Billy Barty, not recently in that the movie was recent, because I think he might be dead.
He's dead.
Oh, he's very dead.
But at the Alamo Draft House, they play weird movies like on Wednesday and Tuesday nights. And one time they showed Skate Town USA, which is a movie starring Patrick Swayze and a bunch of other famous people. It's like Patrick Swayze's first role, and it's about a roller disco rink and like a big competition that's happening that night. And Billy Barty plays the husband of Flip Wilson, who was in drag.
What
a choice. What a brave choice.
A movie. Wow. I have never heard of this movie. I kind of want to
really
seek
good.
It out now.
I think Scott Baio is like, because Patrick Swayze is the villain. I think Scott Baio is the lead.
Boo.
I
forget.
Hey, a family can be Billy Barty and Flip Wilson in drag.
Yes.
Who are we to judge?
That's a family.
That's a family.
but I love the line, I spend 23 hours a day in this house. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's a thing I would think to myself a lot when I was underemployed and would like spend in, you know, 4 or 5 days in a row in my apartment. Like, oh, yeah, I went to get food, but literally, I did spend 23 hours of the day in this house.
I've had a life time in my life like that.
Yeah, me too. I also love Homer's supportiveness of this too. Of like, get him, Ma.
Yeah, he turned into like a Southern sheriff.
It's beautiful.
Get him.
But Bart has made things right, and then we get one of the most meme-worthy scenes in this whole episode.
Since I got my present early, I think you should get yours early, too.
Bart got a present early? Then I should get a present early. I want a present!
Lisa, you have to wait.
This is the worst Christmas ever.
Aww.
Now, I know you love video games, and I asked the clerk which is the one every boy wants. You got me! Oh, yeah! Thanks, Mom.
He got Battleborn.
Yeah, I've seen many jokes like that. Battleborn and Overwatch is the best one. Oh, you got me. Oh. Yeah, and the comedy duo Garfunkel and Oates do a song called Present Face, which is about this of like putting on your present face and not showing disappointment at a gift somebody got.
But did you.
You
guys ever have this happen with video games where you get the wrong one?
Not with video games, because I would get very specific. Well, when I was extra young, any game was the game I wanted. If I got a game, I was happy for it. As I got older, I just knew to be specific to Santa and then Mom of like, this is the game.
I always got the impression that my parents and like anyone who would buy a video game for me for a gift, they would usually get it at the bargain bin.
Yeah.
I remember when the Super Nintendo came out, I was like, if I get a Super Nintendo for Christmas, can you please get me WWF Super WrestleMania? Mm-hmm. And my aunt got me Desert Strike, which was also a pretty good game, but it was like, this, like, I felt like I got Lee Carvalho's Fighting Gentleman. A helicopter game. I don't really like helicopters.
I wanted Hulk Hogan.
Well, if you see my podcast notes, you know they're overly elaborate and there's way too much there. That was my Christmas list. Like, I want this game. Here's how much it costs. Here are the stores that carry it. Here's a backup thing to get me. Like, here's a game. Here are the games I don't want. It was like very, very specific. It was here's your agenda,
but
your shopping agenda.
The way that Lee Carvalho's Fighting Challenge is presented during the credits, it makes it seem it's like a ColecoVision game because it uses a giant keypad,
or it's a PC game. With all that dialogue, it feels like it'd have to be a PC game.
You certainly couldn't do it with a Sega Genesis-esque 6-button controller.
No way. Like, he wants you to enter numbers, and I wrote down the Intellivision, which is like the controller looks like a phone. It's got a dial and a bunch of numbers like a phone keypad, which sucks. It really sucks.
But just too, I'm mad. If I would have been furious at that store clerk who lied to Marge to sell a bad game to him.
They were trying to offload that game. Comic book guy said there were tons of copies of it left.
It's just so beautiful. Like, what's the game every kid wants? The one we're getting rid of. It's beautiful. But
it's half off.
The closest thing I did to this, this made me feel, this brought back guilty memories for me because, look, I was only 6 or 7 at the time, but... So I had some wrestling toys, and these were the bad wrestling toys, like the thumb fighter ones you put on your finger. You put on your thumb of like Roddy Piper fighting the Iron Sheik. You couldn't even get freaking Hulk Hogan because he was usually sold out. And I already had them. Then we were visiting a friend of my dad's for Christmas, and he got us gifts, and when he gave it to us, it was those guys again. And I just said out loud, like, I already have these. These are good. And
give them to a poor kid.
They made me feel, my parents made me feel bad afterwards. By made me, I mean, they reminded me of like, that was very rude. And
it's a lesson you kind of need to learn.
But then again, as I would find out later, as I grew older and learned emotional intelligence, I realized that guy's very racist. So I don't feel too bad about hurting his
Who was the wrong one in that situation?
Yeah. I know. He needs to grow up.
Fuck off, racist. I own these.
Yeah. I'm too young to know what a slur is, but you just said one.
Yes, a great episode. Very emotional and very painful if you're a mama's boy like all of us. Mm-hmm. And
makes me tear up every time when she hugs Bart again. I'm like, this is me. I want my mom to hug me.
The worst thing is like the lack of respect or, I guess, love from your mom or the withholding of love because you fucked up. It's just like it is still painful.
Yeah. Ouch. Ugh, it hurts. Yeah. This is a beautiful one about video games too. Like few things in pop culture really crystallized what video games were like in the mid-90s than this episode too.
Yes. And it was a worthy follow-up, you know, after 6 years of there not being a Christmas episode, that this one, it was, I mean, in my opinion, you know, depending on the day of the week, I think it's better than the pilots.
I think it's better than Open Fire. I do.
I mean, this is the Simpsons that we know. Open Fire is still like weird proto-Simpsons who are not where they need to be yet. And Barney's got a girlfriend. We don't want to talk about that anymore. So, yes, thanks for listening, folks. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. This has been Talking Simpsons. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. Please follow me. I make lots of jokes there. My other podcast is Retronauts. Find us at retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. We've been going on since 2006. I recommend you find a topic you like and download that episode, and I might be on it, and if I am, I think you'll like it. You'll like the other ones too. Everybody else,
patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. That's what supports this show, and you can hear every episode a week early and ad free. It also supports our new animation podcast, What a Cartoon, where we go through a different cartoon each week in the Talking Simpsons style, like King of the Hill, Batman the Animated Series, Steven Universe. There's so many great ones, and you can hear those a week early and ad free. And if you love Futurama, which if you're listening to this, come on, you do.
You admit it.
You want to hear us do Talking Futurama, where we go through the entire first season of that. And as we said multiple times on this episode, but it must be said again, we did an interview with Bill Oakley and an interview with Mike Scully and an interview with Dan Graney, all that cover aspects of this episode in it, along with many others. And you can only hear those for supporting us for $5 a month at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
And yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Dave Rudden. And if you scroll back to Christmas of 2017, that's when I did my ranking of every single Christmas episode. Mm. And I'm looking at it now. This was the number one episode.
I'd give it number one.
And me too.
Last place was Kill Gil.
Kill Gil.
Yeah.
No thanks.
No, thank you.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with Team Homer. See you then.
Welcome to Lee Carvello's Putting Challenge. I am Carvello. Now choose a club. You have chosen a 3-wood. May I suggest a putter? 3-wood. Now enter the force of your swing. I suggest feathered touch. You have entered power drive. Now push 7, 8, 7 to swing. Ball is in. Parking lot. Would you like to play again? You have selected no.